Today's shiur is dedicated by Dr. Yosef and Mrs. Yael Gurevich in honor of their grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. Moshe Rubin. Today's shiur is dedicated for Refuah Shleima for Shalom Ben Bracha. Today's shiur is Daf Masechta Ksuvos Daf Ayin Tes, and we will begin Daf Ayin Chesam Beis, three lines from the bottom. Says the Gemara, he itasa, the boy, the tavrachinu l'nichsa megavra. She wanted her husband not to have rights to her assets of the nichsa melog that she owned. So what she did was, says the Gemara, kasfina l'barte, she wrote them over to her daughter as if she doesn't own it. Very, very big machloikus rishonim, exactly what happened here. Rashi learns that she notified the Edom that she was writing them over to her daughter, not for the intention of really giving ownership to these assets to her daughter. Her entire purpose was that her husband should not have the rights, as we keep on discussing, of the Nichsi Malug that his wife owned. Most Rishonim, Tosfos, the Ramban, the Ran, disagree with Rashi, because they all say that if she was very clear what her intentions were, and the Edom heard what her intentions were, there would be no room for the discussion that we're going to have now in the Gemara. Rather, they explain either that she didn't say anything as she wrote over these assets, or that's how Ritva and Tosfos learn, or that she said that she is intending to get remarried, but she did not explicitly say that her intention is to prevent her husband from having rights to these assets. The reason Rashi learns the way he learns is because we know that throughout Halacha, the rule is Dvarim Shebalev Einam Dvarim. Something which is not articulated, the Halacha is not considered valid. So if she, that's why Rashi said, that's why Rashi learns the Gemara, that she had to have said what she meant. But then, as we said, the Rishonim ask, if she said that, then there's no question that she said it, then why should we have a discussion? What did she mean? The other Rishonim, obviously, are of the opinion that when something is obvious, and we've spoken about this concept in previous shurim, the concept of umdun and the muchach, when it's obvious what somebody's intentions are, even if they weren't clearly mentioned, the halacha recognizes those obvious intentions. And that's why those Rishonim explain that our Gemara is referring to a situation where it was an umdun and a muchach, as we're saying, that her intention was that her husband shouldn't get ownership of rights to these assets. So says the Gemara, Kasfina Labarta, she wrote over these assets to her daughter, Intzibah, and then she got married, Figrisha, and she got divorced. Asla kamed Rav Nachman. So this question was brought to Rav Nachman, and she said that she had only written over those assets in order that her husband should not be able to get the rights of Nechse Melog. Says the Gemara, Rav Nachman kar Rav Nachman shtara. Rav Nachman ripped up the shtar. He recognized that was her intention, and that this shtar that indicates that she wrote over these assets to her daughter is meaningless. And as the Rishonim point out, why did he rip up the shtar? Because Rav Nachman, being of the opinion, as we just learned, that this entire transaction was meaningless, he did not want anybody to chas v'shalom use the shtar in a wrong manner. So he said, the best thing is just to rip up the shtar. So he commented, do you see Rav Nachman, who is like a chakla, who's like a farmer? A farmer is obviously an individual who doesn't know halacha. How he goes and rips up shtaris. So Rav Marukva wanted to understand exactly what happened. So Marukva said to Rav Anan, Emily, easy, gufa da hechi havi. Please tell me exactly what happened. Amalei. So he said, Hachiv Achihava. This is exactly what happened. Amalei. So he said, this was clearly a shtar avrechet kamrit, that the entire purpose of the shtar was being written was to have the ability that the husband shouldn't get rights to these assets. And he said, Hachi Amar Rav Chneloi, Amar Rav Baridi, Amar Shmuel, Mayra Hayroanoi, I have authorization from the Reish Galusa to Paskin Dine Mamanis, and he only gave such authorization to people who are well-versed in the halacha, and I know that I tell you, if a question of a shtam of rachas would come to my hand, ekrena, I would rip up the shtar. And therefore, he says what he did was very much in order, because he was in every right. He had every right. The shtar was not meant to be valid, the halach, and therefore he said, I have a right to rip up the shtar. As the Shita says, that here we had a shtar mavrechas, and Rav Anon, hearing this dialogue, said that maybe only Shmuel, who we know throughout Shas was the big expert in Hilchot Dinei Mamonos, has a right to paskin. And he says, no, this psak is very much in order. Amalei, Rav Nachman, who ripped up the shtar, how could you do so? Tamamai, why is the halacha that a shtar mavreches is meaningless? The shloishavik inish nafsh the yov lachrini. The wife, the mother, would have not ignored her own needs and given away everything. But says the Gemara, hanimili, when would we say so lachrini? If she wrote the shtar, she wrote over her assets to someone who isn't a close relative, a daughter. Av labarti yehive. But a parent maybe would write over their assets to the children. And therefore, why are you so quick to say that the shtar should be written up? Says the Gemara, afil hachi. Indeed, a parent does do things for children, but says the Gemara, b'markam barata nafsha difala. As much as she cares for her daughter, she is concerned about herself, and she doesn't want to be left penniless. And therefore, the halacha is that she is entitled, we assume that the shtar was only written for that purpose, and therefore you could rip it up. Meisvei asked the Gemara, it says in a brisa, Haroitza should have riach nechas mibala, if somebody wants to have her avoid, that her husband should have rights to her assets, Keitzeriyosa, exactly what should she do? Koisevishta pasim lachrim. She writes a shtar pasim that the person to whom she's writing over this gift should understand that he's not really taking ownership of this asset that she's writing to him, that she's only writing it to him to avoid her husband getting his hands on these nechsim belog. Divrei Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Chum Omrim and the Chum say, if you're going to do this, rotza masachet boy, so then the person who is the recipient of this gift may ultimately say to her that there's a document that says that all of the assets are written to me. And that's what it says, and that's what it means. So the way to avoid that type of a situation from occurring, she has to write in the shtar that only if I ultimately agree that this should be given to you, then it will be given to you. But if not, the deal is off. So since she said that wording, and the way the Rishonim explained that she says that the gift will only be considered a gift if she ultimately says roitzani, that I want this gift to be a valid gift, and then the gift will indeed be valid. But if she doesn't, if she says she doesn't want the gift to be a gift, or even if she remains silent, the gift is not a gift. But there is a fundamental machlokes rishonim. What is going to be the status of this of gift until she makes that declaration? Some rishonim are of the opinion, the Rosh and the Tor, are of the opinion that whatever, till she makes this declaration, the property is indeed considered under the ownership of the person to whom she wrote the gift. And therefore, according to the Russian Torah, if he ate peiris, if he collected rent or ate produce from this field, he would not have to reimburse the woman who gave her the gift. However, there are Rishonim, the Shittim Kabetzis quotes the Ra'ah, and that takes a different approach, that if the gift is declared invalid, it's even valid retroactively. But, says the Gemara, learning the opinion of the Chachamim, Tam the Kasal Ehachi, only because this stipulation was included in the Shtar. Haloi Kasal Ehachi, if that stipulation would not be included, Kaninu Lekeach, it would become the property of the recipient. So how could Shmuel have said, asked the Gemara, that when such a shtar comes to him, he rips it up? Because it's clear that it wasn't the intention to receive it. Isn't this Bryce a clearly indication that unless she made that condition in the shtar, it doesn't make a difference? So the Tosfos Rit asks, yes, Shmuel's opinion is difficult to understand based on what the Chachamim just learned in this Bryce. But on the other hand, the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel is very much consistent with the opinion of Shmuel. So why do we say that Shmuel is following the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel? So the Tosfos Rit answers, because we have a rule, Yochid Rabim, Halach Karabim. So it's difficult. The Gemara does not want to establish that Shmuel is saying his opinion like Rav Shimon Gamliel, contrary to the Chachamim. But so what is the halacha when we have this type of a shtar? Do we rip it up, as Shmuel said, or do we keep it, as the Chachamim seem to say, unless there's a clear stipulation to the contrary? Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Zeira Lekasha, Habakula, if she wrote over all her assets, so it's very obvious that she's not interested in leaving nothing for herself, and then Shmuel says we should rip it up. If she wrote up only some of the assets, so then there's a strong argument that could be said that she only meant that she meant it seriously, and therefore the shtar is a valid shtar. Now, the Rishonim discuss how much does she have to have left over for herself that the halacha will say that's a proof that this was a serious gift. So the Rif says that the amount is, any small amount makes it that it should not be considered a shtar mavrechas. The Rosh says it's the amount kedei parnesosoi, the amount that she needs to live. And the Rosh says the way to understand this halacha, suggests the Rosh, is comparing it to a case of a shchimira. We know that if a shchimira, divrei shchimira k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, and a shchimira, a person who's very sick, gives over his assets to somebody, even if there wasn't what's normally required as a valid kinyan, the halacha is divrei shchimira k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, it's considered a valid gift. And the halacha is, if the shchimira gets up and he doesn't die, Baruch Hashem, so we understand that the only reason he gave this gift was because he assumed that he's going to pass away. And if Baruch Hashem, he survives, the gift is not considered a valid gift. However, the halacha says that if the shchimira left over some assets for himself, the fact that he left over some assets for himself is clearly indication that he meant to give this gift even if he will survive. So the Rosh says, whatever is the halacha by a shchimira, that the halacha says that if the shchimira left over that much, even if he gets well, the halacha is that the gift is still valid, that will be the same shear over here as well. Says the Gemara, another question on Shmuel. Vi loikanina lekeach, why if the, ask the Gemara, if according to Shmuel, the shtar mavreches is really not considered a valid shtar, that means it's still these assets are still considered the assets of the wife. And if they're considered the valid assets of the wife, so kanin abal, so they should be treated like all other nechsim alug, that we know the halach is, that by nechsim alug, the husband gets the peiros. Omar Abaya. So Abaya says, "Awesome can the chosim sheni do labal believe with Rav Shimon." The Gemara goes back to what we learned in our Mishnah, the opinion of Rav Shimon, that even though the husband has the rights to the peiros of nichsei malug, we learned Rav Shimon's opinion is those are only regarding nichsei malug that the husband knew about. But if the husband doesn't know about them, then the halacha isn't that way. And the reason we explained in our previous shiur is because a husband could always claim that he married his wife, except assuming that he's going to get the nichsei malug. And if he doesn't get the peiros of the nichsei malug, and therefore he has a right to that claim. But if he wasn't aware of those nichsei malug, he can never say he got married based on that, because he wasn't even aware of it. Here too, says the Gemara, the fact that he wrote these assets, the fact that it was written that way is a proof that the halach is treated the same way, and even though the nichsei malug, the husband has no rights to those. So here we just learned the halacha of a shtar mavreches. There's an interesting discussion that a husband was a wealthy man. Ramosha discusses this in his tshuvas, and his wife passed away, and his wife had left over a tzava, that a very large sum of money that she owned, should be given to tzedakah. But the question is, does the right wife have a right to make that type of a tzava? Because as we've learned so many times, the husband is the yorish of the wife. So she can't give away something that's really not hers. So Rav Moshe in that tshuva, in Eben Ezra, Chelek Aleph, Siman Kuf Dalet, discusses that shaila, and he says that really it should be similar to the mavreches. Just like we learned in our shir, that if a wife doesn't want her husband to get hold of her assets, he could write a shtar mavreches, and we've learned under certain circumstances how that shtar would be a valid shtar. So says Rav Moshe, this would be considered a valid a situation of a mavreches. And therefore, Rav Moshe says that the husband has no right to that money. There's an interesting element to that discussion. And that is if the husband had pledged money to that stalker as well. Could he at least say that the money that my wife left in this tzava should be considered satisfactory to fulfill my obligation? The Michas Yitzchak in Chelek Vav Simen Kuf Nun Beis discusses this question as well, the same Shaila, and he says that the question really hinges at what point did the tzedakah get ownership of this money. If the tzedakah got ownership of this money from when she wrote the tzava, so it was before the husband was the Yairish. If, on the other hand, the tzedakah only gets ownership of it after she dies, so they can't take ownership of it because it doesn't belong to her, it belongs to him. So he says clearly that the moment she wrote this to tzedakah, it becomes the property of the tzedakah. And since at that point it becomes the property of the tzedakah, the husband never becomes the yorish or the owner of these assets. We found in our Gemara that Rav Anon said to Mar Ukva when he was not satisfied with the psak that Rav Nachman did, and that he had ripped up the shtar mavreches, he called him chaklo, which is a derogatory term. Says the Chafetz Chaim, how was he allowed to do so? So the Chafetz Chaim says that given that Rav Ukva was the Abbezdin, and he was responsible to make sure that people were following the halacha properly, so when he saw something that was incorrect being done, and he wanted to make sure that Rav Ukva would take his job seriously, he would make sure that how serious he thought was going on here. He had a right to use this kind of a derogatory term in describing Rav Nachman. But, explains the Chofetz Chaim, even though Rav Onan did the right thing in reporting what he thought was an injustice, Marukva also did the right thing. He says that Marukva didn't just accept what Rav Anan said, even though Rav Anan was a great individual, but what he did was he investigated the matter independently, and actually he said that what Rav Nachman had done was very much consistent with the opinion of Shmuel, with the opinion that the Halacha requires us to do. Which opens up an interesting discussion, because here we see that how a Rebbe, Rav Marukva, had to investigate the status of the situation before he made any decisions. And the question that the Paiskim discussed that come up is, what's going to be the halacha if something happened in a classroom and the Rebbe is trying to investigate what happened, and he asks, somebody did something improper, and the Rebbe asks the Talmidim, the students, all the students, to please disclose who did this terrible thing. Should the Rebbe do so? Should the Talmidim report? So Rav Moshe Zatzal, the Shas Chuvas Igros Moshe Yerodeya Chelik Beis, Simon Kuf Beis, discusses this, and he says that it's wrong for the Rebbe to even ask the question. He says, unless the Rebbe's intentions are 100% honorable, that he's really doing it for the benefit of the Talmidim, and Ramesh himself says we can't be certain that anybody is on that madrega, not only should the Rebbe shouldn't ask, he says it's a bad chinuch to teach children that they should talk about other children. On the other hand, the Shevet Alevi, Chelik Yud Simon Kuf Samach Beis, discusses the similar Shaila. He says that the Rebbe has to judge every situation. Sometimes it's for the benefit of the other students that he should become aware exactly what happened. And if that's the case, he says the halacha would be that the Rebbe has a right to make this request. But if it's not that way, says Rav Ozner Zatzal, it's better not to ask such questions. Says the Mishnah, Nafala Ksofim, if a woman inherited cash, so we know that the cash has to be turned into Nechsim Elog. So what should they do? And then the husband will get the payris. So says the Mishnah, Yelokach Ben Karka, that cash that she inherited should be properly should be worth it. And then now it becomes Nechsim Elog, Vu Oichel Peiris, and as we've discussed many times, the husband eats the Peiris of the Nechsim Elog. Similarly, if she inherited Peiris Telushim and Akarka, if she inherited fruit, so we want to turn the fruit into the Nechsim Elog, Yelokah Ben Karka, they should buy property with that cash, Vu Oichel Peiris, and the husband will eat the Peiris. The halacha is, Say the Rishonim, that what is our Mishnah coming to teach us? The Mishnah is coming to teach us that it's not that she has to turn over the cash to the husband and that the husband will now use that cash to invest in business. Rather, they should buy something like karka, which will guarantee to buy, to make peiros. Says the Mishnah, peiros hamechubar makarka, if this woman becomes the owner of fruit that's attached to the ground, arameya, the fruit that grew in that ground have the halacha of Shaman Osoi, Kamen Yofa Beperis. We look at that property. How much is it worth with the fruit on them? The Kamen Yofa Beloya Peris, and how much it's worth without the fruit on it? Well, Meiser, so the difference is considered Nichsim Malug, and Yelokach Ben Karka, with that cash, they should buy karka. V'oichel peiros, and the husband will eat peiros. V'cham maimrim hamechubarim l'karka, anything that's attached to the ground currently is considered already peiros of nechsim elog, and the peiros of the nechsim elog shaloi belong to the husband. Hatlushim in a karka, anything that's detached from the ground is shaloi, is considered like her assets, And as we've been learning, when a woman has assets, what we should do with those assets, a yilakha ben kaka, we should buy property with them for oichel peiris, and he'll eat the peiris. And Rashi explains that anything that has still value has the halacha of nichsim malug, and that she gets the right, but anything that not is not considered nichsim malug. Says the Mishnah, Shimon Aimer, Makum Shaf Kaich ben Ksasai, in a place where the husband's situation is strong, her when the assets fall to her, he's weak when they get divorced. And Makum Shara Kuchab Ksasai, in a place where his position is weak when they get married, Paris Mukhubaram Lakaka Bikinasai, if she, as they get married, owns Paris, so we just said Shloi, those Paris belong to him because they're considered Paris of Nechsim Elog. If those Paris are still attached to the ground when they get divorced, Shloi, because when a couple gets divorced, all of the everything reverts back to her. And Atalushim Mikakim Nechsim, which are Shloi, we didn't consider them Nechsim Elog. But Tziyasai, they're considered Paris. So since they're considered Paris, Shaloi, they become his. So the Shita explains, why does the Mishnah have to say, again, that Atlushim and Akarka Shaloi? Because the Mishnah wants to teach us is that Paris HaMechubarim LaKarka, even if they're ready to be cut, since they haven't yet been cut, they belong to the husband. Only when they're telushim in a karka, only when they're completely detached from the ground, do they no longer have the status of peiris nechsim malug. Says the Gemara Pshita. So we've been learning that a woman who brings cash, the simplest example, into the marriage, so the halacha is that cash should be converted into karka, which will have the halacha of Nechse Melog, that she owns the basic asset and he gets the Paris. So now we have a debate between the husband and wife. What should they do with the cash? So Pshita, Ara Bati, they have a dispute. Should they buy property that they could plant on, or should they buy homes that they could rent and he could get the interest, he could get the rent. Over the cost. Ara. The halacha is that we prefer to buy property that they could plant. Because Rashi explains, it has more income and it also lasts longer. Houses don't last forever. Property that gives fruit is more likely, there's much less depreciation. If they have a debate, one wants bati, one wants to buy homes to rent, the other wants the kolim, another one wants to buy palm tree, bati. Because rent is better than palm trees, because palm trees, they dry out. And therefore, houses are a better investment. Dikli vilani, if there's a choice to buy palm trees or fruit trees, dikli. Because palm trees, says the Meiri, give more fruit than regular fruit trees. Ilani and Gufni, they want to buy different types of fruit trees, and one wants to buy grape trees only. Regular fruit trees are better on vineyards because grape trees dry out much quicker. Another pshat that I saw was showing him that much more investment is needed in a grape tree than in a fruit tree. Abazardasa, says the Mara, if she got a Yerusha of trees of Azardim, which are very poor quality fruit, and typically they just cut down this tree for the wood, or Peri the Kavri, or she got a pond full of fish, Amrele Peri, some say that the fish and the fruit are considered, the fruit, the trees, the wood, and the fish are considered like nixa peiris. Bamlay, and some say that they're not considered like Paris, they're considered like the Karen, which belongs to her. Klal de Misa. So the Gemara wants to establish a rule. How do I know what's considered Paris, and how do I know what's considered Karen? Gizla Machlif, something that comes back, is considered Pera. Shein Gizla Machlif, something that gets depleted and doesn't come back, is considered Karna, and it's not considered Paris. Amrav Zera, Amrav Oshu, Amrav Yanei. Vamalei, Amrav Abba, Amrav Oshu, Amrav Yanei. Hagoynef Vlad Behemoth Slug. A woman got in Yerusha that animal, and the animal had a baby, and that animal was stolen. So the halacha is Meshalem Teshlumei Kefil Isha. The Gemara is assuming that Rabbi Yanei is saying that even though, as we keep on saying in our shir, that the peiros of Nichsei Melug belong to the husband, but the what is produced by the Behemoth Melug are considered like the Karen and not like peiros. And therefore, in this case, where the animal was stolen, it's considered like the Nichsei Melug itself was stolen. And since it's considered like the Nichsei Melug was stolen, the Kefil, which is the outgrowth of that, belongs to the wife, says the Gemara. Kaman, Rabbi Yanai, who said this halacha, seemingly is not consistent like Rabbanah, like Chananya, not with the opinion of Rabbanah, not with the opinion of Chananya. The Tanya, the Brisa teaches us, Vlad Behemoth Melug, the Vlad of an animal that was brought in as Nichsei Melug, it belongs to the husband. Vlad Shifchas Melug, the child born from a shifcha that was brought in as Nichsei Melug, goes to the Isha. The Chananya ben Achi Oishi Omer, also Vlad Shivas Melug, Kvlad Behemoth Melug. They treat, just like the animal that was born from Nichsei Melug belongs to the husband, it's considered Paris, so to the child that was born to the shifcha, which is Nichsei Melug, are treated like Paris, which belonged to the husband. So now, Rabbi Yanai, who said that the Vlad goes to the woman, is not consistent. The Vlad of the Behemoth is considered as if it belongs to the wife. And that's why the Kefil that was produced belongs to the wife. Why? Here we said that everybody agrees that the Vlad of Nichsei Melug belongs to the husband. Says the Gemara, Filo Tema Kedirei Akol. Rabbi Yanai could agree with all these opinions. Peira, what actually is produced by the Nichsei Melug, to Kinah L'Rabbanan. That's what Chazal says should go to the husband. Here it's Peira the Peiri. The Kefil is not directly coming out of the Nichsei Melug. It's only something that's paid because somebody stole something. And that is not considered like Peiris, says the Gemara. Peira the Peiri to Kinah L'Rabbanan. So the Rishonim ask, well, how do we understand this? What's the halacha? We're saying that the animals that were born from Nichsei Melug are considered Paris and are considered belong to the husband. What happens if those children have children? That's called Peira de Peira, and we're going to learn that the Peira de Peira also go to the husband. So why are we saying that this is considered like Peira de Peira, and since it's considered like Peira de Peira, it doesn't go to the husband? So Tosis answers that there's a difference by something which is produced by the payri itself, or something that's produced from an external payment. When we speak about payris and payri the payris being considered like payris and going to the husband, it's something that comes out from the animal itself. Whereas what we're discussing in our shear is external. Since it's something which is external, it's not treated that way. So the Gemara understands, the Gemara tries to understand the machloikas of Chananya and the Rabbanon regarding Vlad Shivchas Melug, that Bishlam El Chananya, so he says the Gemara, according to Chananya, Hani Delay Chashina Lamisa, he's not concerned about the death of the mother, and therefore he considers that the mother is considered Nichsei Melug, which belonged to the woman, and anything that emanates from the mother will be considered Peiris. El Rabbanon, Ichai Shalamisa, if they're concerned that the Karen will not survive, and in a case where the Karen would not survive, it is their opinion that it's not considered Paris. So I feel Vlad Behemoth Melug Namiloi. V'loichai shel misin, if they're not concerned, so why by shifchas melugnami the halacha should be that it's considered peiros and go to the husband? Answers the Gemara lo'olam chai shel misa. The Chazal were chai shel misa. Shani behema, but the Rabbanan now add a new condition that if when something dies, it's not going to be completely worthless. Then it's not. Then it's when even if it dies, it's still the keren is considered still in existence. And since then, since the keren is still considered in existence, so the peiros belong to the husband. And when an animal dies, when a person dies, when the shivcha dies, so there's nothing left when somebody dies. But when the animal dies, there's something left for the wife to have as the nechsim alog, the hide of the animal. And that's why the animal, the babies born to that animal, could be considered peiros. Unlike the babies that are born to the shivcha of the woman, which is her nechsim alog. Amar Rav Huna bar Achiya Amar Shmuel, halacha kechananya. And we don't have to, the halacha is not concerned that the nechsim alog will not longer be in existence, that what should be that therefore what's born from it should not be considered peiros. Amar Rav Nachman, Avgav da Mishmuel Chalok Chananya, even though Shmuel just told us the Lachs Chananya, Moida Chananya, Chananya agrees, Shim Nizgarsha, that if Shivcha brought in, if the woman brought in Shivcha, says Nechsim Melog, and they had children, that if they get divorced, and we just said that the Halach is that those children are considered Paris, and since they're considered Paris, they belong to the husband. What she could do, if she so wants, Nesenes Damim, she could pay for those children, Venet Lason, and take it for herself. Neshvach Beisavia. The way the Rishonim explains is that since these are the children of the Shivcha that she brought into the marriage, so they're considered attached to her family. So she has a right to claim, I want to take them with me, but indeed, since they were Paris, they were born while we were married, I have to reimburse you for them. Amar Rav Aram Nachman, Hechnis lo eiz. If a woman brought a goat into the marriage, l'chalba, and the goat gives milk, a rochel, she brought a sheep into the marriage, and that sheep gives wool, tanagoyl, so she brought chickens into the marriage, and lebeitos, and they give eggs, dekel, or she brought a tree into the marriage, and has peroisov, oichel v'heilich, the husband has a right to eat the peiros, achetichla keren, until the keren no longer exists. Why? Because even when the keren no longer exists, they still have some value. And since they still have value, they're considered regular nechsim alog that the husband eats the peiros. Amar Rav Nachman, Ayla glima, if a woman brought a garment into the marriage, perihavi, the wearing of this garment is considered peiros, and therefore the husband, mechse beiv ozel, he could wear the garment ad the kalya until it's no longer wearable. Kaman, says the Gemara, even though it's very minimal value after it's no longer wearable, still, as long as it still has even minimal value, it's still considered that it's still in existence, and as long as it's considered still in existence, it's considered nechsim alog that the husband gets to use the peiros. Says the Gemara, whose opinion is that minimal value is still considered value? K'man kai Tanya. The Tanya, if a woman got as Yerusha a pit full of melech, the Tanya HaMelech, she got a pit full of salt, that it's a pit near a sea where the water dries up from the heat, from the sun, and you're left with salt. V'chol, or she got a pile of earth. Hareza Paris. The halacha is that these are considered Paris of Nechsim Alog. But if she got Pirsha Gufras, a sulfur pit, Machbayra Shal Trif, or she got something that's used for dyeing, for color. Ramei Oymek Karen, they're considered Karen, and they should be sold, and the husband should get the Paris. They don't have to sell it. What's in there are considered payrus. Even though after they used up this very minimal value, it's still considered, as long as there's something left, that's considered left. Rav Shimon Amen Makom Shiyafa Kaychai. The Rav Shimon says that where the husband's strength is strong when he comes in, vice versa when they divorce, and so too the other way around. Ask the Gemara of Shimon Hayu Tanakama. The Tanakama, the Chacham and our Mishnah agreed that anything that's attached to the ground is considered his. Anything that any payers that were detached are considered hers. What's Rav Shimon saying different than Tanakama? Answers the Gemara Amarava Hamechupar Mishas Yitzia. What's going to be halacha about payers that are still attached to the ground when they get divorced? Ikibinayu. The Tanakama holds that those payers are his. And Rav Shimon holds that since they're attached to the ground, they hers the part of the Nechsi Malok. Nafla lo avadim shvachas akenim. So a woman got in Yerusha, elderly avadis shvachas, that really can't work much. Yemachru, the lochas, they should be sold, and they should be used to buy property for Eichel Peiris. And again, as we've been learning, sell them off, buy property, and he'll get the, and the husband will get the Peiris. Rav Shimon Gamliel Eimer, Leitimka. If the wife refuses to allow them to be sold, she has a right to say, I don't want them to be sold, because she has a right to say, Shvach Beisavia. She has a right to say, they're part of my family, and I'm not prepared to sell it. So Yerushalmi says that the machloikis of Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chamim is only when the amount that it costs to keep them is more than what they earn. But if it's equal, then the halach is that everybody agrees that the wife could stop them from being sold. I asked the Shita, if everything that they earn, they don't earn that much, so the up to support them is equal to what they earn, so why could the husband say he has to keep him? He can't, the husband, claim that this is not considered payrus. So the Shita explains that the Yerushalmi is going to have to say that in such a case, the wife indeed has a right to claim that I don't want to let them be sold. The Shvach Beisavia, they're important to me because they came from my family, but she would have to reimburse the husband for what he would be able to normally earn on payrus. Nafala Zaysim V'Gafarim Zakenim, a woman Yarshin, old vineyard or old olive field, Yemachav Yelaka Ben Karka V'Eichel Peiris, because they don't really produce much. Rav Yehuda Eimer, again, she could stop them from selling them, Neshen Shvacha V'Esaviyah, where she could say that this is important to me because this is part of my family's heritage. Amrav Kahana Amrav, Machloike Shenafal B'Sodah Shaloi, that the Gemara spoke about these, the Mishnah spoke about these olive trees, these grape trees. Says the Gemara that that's only if they fell in property that she owns the property. But let's say she doesn't own the property on which these trees are on. Then the husband has a right to demand they be sold. She doesn't own the property and the trees are going to wither away. Masla Rabbi Yosef, Harivadim Shvachis. When we speak about servants, the Chisad Neshein Shaloi, that it's also something that's not going to stay forever, especially if we're speaking about elderly servants, and yet we have them pligi. So we see the fact that there's nothing left doesn't make a difference. Aliyatma Hachiyatma. Amar Rav Amar Nachman Mechloikus Besod Neshein Shaloi. If the only thing that she has is the trees, and she wants to hold on to them, and he doesn't. Aval besod shalom, but if the trees are on the field that she owns, divrei hakol loytimkar. Since she owns the actual property on which these trees are found, there for sure she could stop the sale. Nay, since the field is always going to be there, and the field is shvach beisavia, this is property that she's attached to. There's a property that belonged to her family. So since she's going to keep the property, and the property isn't going to disappear, she also can make a claim. She could also make a claim not only on the property, but she could also make a claim on the. She could also make a claim on the trees, even though they're not really producing much. But one thing we see from this Gemara, We know the halacha is that one is not allowed to cut down a fruit tree. But from this Mishnah, we seem to learn that if a tree is not really producing fruit and it's not worth to keep it, that the Gemara and the Mishnah were not concerned about cutting it down. The concern was the debate between the husband and the wife. But any other consideration is not something that the Mishnah was concerned with. So we see that even though we're not allowed to cut down a fruit tree, if it's really not producing and it's not of value, then maybe you're allowed to cut it down.